It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I think what probably is the issue is that I think you're just a huge liar. You're a cat with cold paws. And yes, a lovely anus. I've seen it before. Thank you. Move along. I actually envisioned a scenario where I was lying on the floor and I had the mic positioned so it was just like hanging over my head.
That'd be comfortable, I guess.
You would think, but I don't know. Okay, I said I wasn't going to touch the mic, and then I lied. I'm a big liar. I will try and hold it, like, still, though.
Not move it around so much?
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that can be seen in the background of Adele's video, Hello, at the 44-second mark, for which we got paid nothing.
Not a thing.
Check, it's real fast. Pause it at 44 seconds, you'll see us. Or the podcast, not us.
Right.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 245.
And later it's going to be 246, but you won't know over that for a week. Because it's that time of year again, people. It's the Thanksgiving times.
Yeah.
And so here we are. At Peter's Donuts.
I guess we always do a double episode the week before Thanksgiving.
Yes, because you always talk about how we always have a Thanksgiving episode. Because Thursday.
Yeah, which I think is awesome.
Would you say you're thankful for it?
Yeah, I am thankful for it.
Ugh, you're such a tool.
But we've got to save up all of our Thanksgiving talk for next week.
Absolutely. So, for those of you just joining us, next week we'll talk about Thanksgiving. For right now, here's how it works. We have a hat. It's magical. Has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. And people who are going to help us out, and who do help us out, and who should help us out again, write into that email address, TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com, with stuff. Little notes, little comments, little topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest within the hat itself physically. What would be a good adjective form of eschaton?
I don't know.
Eschatonian.
I have no idea. Awesome. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Eschaton, the creation of the new world, the apocalypse. Yeah.
Right.
You never heard the term eschaton?
Maybe, but I might not.
That it's to be immanentized, according to the Illuminatus trilogy. Oh. They always talk about immanentizing the eschaton.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Basically means bringing about the end of the world. Anyway, we, it's those things, servants, draw the cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the show. And tonight we got to do two of them. And I have known for like a week what the interstitial video that I will make you watch is.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Good.
Actually, mostly I just feel you might find it a little interesting. So, that's it.
Yep.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. It's not even close to an hour yet.
Oh.
All right. So how was your week?
It's good. Good week.
Good week?
Yeah. How about yours?
It's okay.
Tell me all your stories.
I don't know how many I have. I'm still playing Assassin's Creed Rogue. Still enjoying that. Still reading The Last Magician book. spent this last weekend. Did I talk that I was going to do this the last weekend in a hotel in Quad Cities with my in-laws playing games?
I don't remember you talking about that.
That's what we did. Hmm. It's a tradition we started a long time ago. We like to play games in that family.
Mm-hmm.
They've always been generations back. They play a lot of cards and stuff like that. But Trish and I kind of, when we got into board games,
mm-hmm.
introduced them, and they kind of ran with it. And now, particularly my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, and my youngest sister-in-law are very big game players.
Okay.
And so are we. And so a while ago, we did this thing where they would come here for the weekend, get a hotel room, and we would just hang out in the hotel and play games all weekend.
Sounds like fun.
It was. And so we're like, we should do that again. And so we ended up on this weekend, this last weekend. But, as you may recall, or maybe not if you didn't know, there was a very significant football game here. And before that, there was a very significant wrestling match here. And in between those things was a concert. So pretty much, things were crazy around here. Getting a hotel room was not an option. So we got two hotel rooms over in Quad Cities, and we met in the middle. Did that instead. And that was fun. I got to play a lot of games I hadn't played in a long time.
Good.
And annoy the shit out of everybody in a game of Dominion, where out of the 10 possible cards for a given thing, I had 7 of them, and they were torturers. And I played them nonstop and pissed everybody off, and successfully managed to end that game with 0 points, which is impressive, because you start out with 3 points.
Okay.
Yeah. So I managed to get rid of... Not only did I not gain any points, I got rid of those 3.
I don't know anything about that game, so I don't know how impressive that is. But I'll take your word for it that it's impressive.
So that was fun. Haven't really watched any movies, per se. Have watched a couple of TV pilots to discuss.
Okay.
The one... well, actually, no, there's 3 of them. Oh, my goodness, there's 3 of them.
Okay.
I've been busy.
Yeah.
One was, started watching Twin Peaks, watched the pilot.
Okay.
We've discussed that coffee has blackmailed my friendship.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Watching Twin Peaks, so I need to get moving. So I watched the pilot with Trish, who we also found out had never seen the show.
Okay.
I had was under the impression she had, but she hadn't either. She's already out. She did not care for it. She's done. I love it.
You love it?
I love it.
Hmm.
And I don't know that I love it for reasons most people do, and I certainly don't think I love it for reasons people at the time would have loved it.
Why? Why do you
say that? Well, I love it for one thing alone, basically, the atmosphere of it. I don't really care about the mystery. In fact, I used to think they never solved the mystery, but apparently they do, like midway through the second season.
Okay.
Just the atmosphere, which comes down to 3 things.
Okay.
One, it's dated, and that's fascinating to see. It's in 1990, and so the leftover 80s-ness is kind of amusing.
Okay.
2, it's David Lynch, and it's super David Lynch. In fact, I caught myself early on. I was like, that was weird. And then I was like, okay, I need to not say that in this show, because it's David Lynch TV show, I'll be saying that constantly. Despite me telling myself that out loud, I said it like 8 times later. And every time I'm like, damn it, stop it. But it's weird. Weird-ass show.
I guess.
And the 3rd thing is seeing baby versions of various actors that I know and like and respect in some cases, or forgot what happened to. Case in point, I forgot how goddamn hot Joan Chen is. Holy shit, that woman is smoking hot, and I just had managed to forget about her. Oh, she's like a Patrick Nagel painting come to life. Oh, so hot. Also, I was under the impression that Ray Wise was born an old man, but apparently he was not. Also, under the impression that Don S. Davis was born a bald man, which appears to still be true, but also a fat bald man, and also not the case.
Okay.
And yeah, just so many people from back in the day. It's amazing. And it's weird as hell. And according to Coffee, after the pilot and the next couple episodes, they stop spending so much time crying. And they do spend a lot of time crying. But I'm fine with that. It still cracks me up.
Okay.
So I find it very entertaining, but I'm going to have to watch it on my own, which is more difficult. Because usually when I'm on my own, rather than watch a TV show, I will look at the internet or play a video game. And so I'm going to have to use some discipline, but I'm going to do that. All right. Other show. I'm saving the one that I think you'll have things to say about for last, or at least have the most things to say about. But the other show, actual new show, saw the pilot for the AMC show Into the Badlands.
Okay.
Which we discussed, I think, in the past that it was coming.
Yeah, you were excited about
it. Have you seen it?
No.
All right. I was excited for it
for
very minimal reasons, if you'll recall.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it to be good, per se.
Right.
I'm not going to speak to the producer's views on it. I feel like she liked it better than me. I don't know. Well, people keep asking me, is it good? And I say no. But I highly recommend it. Now, I should specify up front, I'm not hate watching this. I don't think it's terrible. But it's pretty dumb in terms of what is clearly going to be a primetime soap opera's worth of weird, convoluted plots.
Mm.
Its very premise is rickety as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
It is so derivative and so... I mean, like, the main guy we're introduced to right off the bat, I'm fairly certain every piece of equipment and piece of clothing he has on them, I could tell you what video game or anime it comes from.
Hmm.
It's amazing. Starting with Orin's coat from Final Fantasy X. There's a lot of dual wielding of katanas going on.
Ooh.
It's ridiculous. The premise that it's a post-apocalyptic thing, and it's a specific area, the Badlands, because we talk about their stuff outside the Badlands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's run by seven people, the Barons. And among other things, the Barons, when they took power, for safety's sake, outlawed firearms. Do you know what this means?
A lot of swords?
Yes, but do you know more what this means? It means, apparently, that there are no guns.
Oh. So, they can just outlaw firearms and all the guns go away.
Holy shit. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure halfway through the season we'll have an episode about one person finding a gun. But, I mean, they're not fucking everywhere. Like, I mean, we're dealing with criminals, we're dealing with smugglers, like, there's plenty of contraband going on, but nobody thought to get a gun in. I'm like, really? That's some powerful decrees
there. Yeah,
like,
well.
Like, holy shit. Yeah, so everybody fights with swords and martial arts, but that's the thing. That's some wuxia motherfucking shit around here. We got people dodging swords in slow motion, and like I said, dual-wielding katanas all over the place. It's so insanely purple and action-y and just fun. It's just gonna be fun.
Okay.
So I do recommend it, but yeah, it's ridiculous. And, well, and like, spoiler alert in that I'm going to talk about things that were so incredibly obvious to me, but technically were not said until later, so it could be considered a spoiler. But we have our guy that we meet, and we figure out he's a badass 5 minutes in because he has to fight a whole crowd of people and wins. And then he finds what he was looking for, which is a young kid. Guess what? The young kid's special.
He's special.
We didn't know this up front.
I wouldn't have predicted that.
I think Trish said, so is he going to be like the apprentice or whatever? I'm like, no, he's the chosen one.
Yeah, the chosen one.
Yeah, I'm like, and none, but I'm like, clearly. And guess what? Later, it turns out he manifests weird powers under certain circumstances that he can't control.
What?
And people want him.
Oh, man.
Yes, and he's got a medallion.
He's got a what?
He's fucking got a medallion.
Man, you're spoiling all these cool things that I could have discovered.
By watching any other show ever. Like, that's the thing. It's just so... It's also clearly, if not on the very same set, the set next door to Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
It's filmed in the South. It's very clearly
of the United States. The
yeah.
Oh.
And it's that vibe. In fact, yeah, the one Baron that we've been dealing with so far has that very old pre-antebellum plantation vibe to it. Can you answer that?
What is it?
Pizza.
Hey, how's it going?
Sorry, I don't mean to keep us in silence while he gets the pizza. That is a little weird. I'm listening to the process. It's fun. Trey's food's here, but you gotta come get it.
You can just set it on something. I don't even know. I'm not gonna eat mine right now, so I don't care. Yeah, so it's just, I mean, it's just full of all these old cliches, but it looks cool, and the people are, like, it looks like silly fun, you know? So, I'm gonna be there for a while. It was funny, though, to promote it. So, you know, AMC has The Walking Dead, and you may recall, AMC also has an after show hosted by Chris Hardwick called Talking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to sell this, they put it in a time slot between Walking Dead and Talking Dead, which seems like a weird place to put it. But it's, you know, I guess, you know, viewership you grab out of that. But consequently, at the commercials, there's these interstitials where Chris Hardwick and the people who are going to be on the Talking Dead talk for a second about this show because they're there and have nothing else to do, I guess. But yeah, no, I think it's going to be entertaining. I don't think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be entertaining.
Okay.
So I'm keeping with that. Third one. Finally, like 3 weeks late, we watched the pilot of Supergirl.
Okay.
This you have seen, I think.
Yep.
All right.
We've kept up with it.
You have? All right. And there's like 3 or 4 episodes so far.
Yeah, something like all that. Right.
We have only watched the pilot. We are going to watch another episode. That might be it.
Why is that?
Because the pilot was really bad.
It wasn't really good.
I found it really bad. I found it having two parts to it in its entirety. Every moment of it was either really hacky superhero cliches or weird, vaguely condescending changes in things because it involved a girl. Like, straight up, there was more crying in that pilot than there has been in any superhero origin pilot ever. And, I mean, people die in a lot of those openings, but there was so much crying in this, and just so much of highlighting, oh, because she's a girl, like, it weirded me out. And then the rest of it was just like every other superhero show I've ever seen. Now, it's a pilot, so it might get better. And I want to throw my support behind it because you don't get a lot of shows with female heroes.
Yeah.
You know? But does it improve from the pilot?
Well, I mean, in terms of the things that you're talking about, I think so, yeah.
All right, good. The second one bothers me more. If it's cliched superhero stuff, my only problem there is getting bored. But, I mean, there were aspects to the pilot that I would say genuinely kind of offended me.
Well.
It just seemed so talking down.
No,
really undercutting exactly what it was trying to do.
Yeah, yeah. I got that also. And also the whole thing with her, you know, fetching coffee for a Devil Wears Prada kind of.
But, oh my God, Calista Flockhart is doing an amazing job, and I'm not sure I mean that as a compliment. She is really pulling off the completely self-absorbed, out-of-touch corporate woman that kind of freaked me out.
The word from the show creators about all of that was that all is supposed to be a little tongue-in-cheek, like, they knew how cliche and everything it was, and they thought that would be funny. My response to that was, no. were being really lazy in writing
their
story.
They even
try.
There's a very specific scene
yeah.
in which they basically have an argument about some feminist stuff, and it's just a shitty
argument. Yeah, it's really terrible.
And throw away, and then we just move on
and
from that.
I actually think that character of Calista Flockhart's character is horrible. I don't know if it's her or if it's just how the character's drawn
I'd say
and written.
It's not her, but I feel like it's a shitty and inaccurate version of we want the opposite of J. Jonah Jameson.
It was just it's just bad. It's just terrible. And I can tell you that in my opinion, in the subsequent shows, whenever she's featured in a scene, I hate it.
Yeah.
I don't like that character. I can't tell if it's how she's playing it or just that it's such a horribly written and drawn character.
I think it's got to be the second, because I'm actually really impressed with her performance.
Okay, well, then that's probably
it. But it's written as it's what guys would think a female J. Jonah Jameson is like, which means it's this weird...
It's just awful.
...stilted, obsessive... Like, yeah, it's... No.
I mean, everything she says is, like, exactly what a
She's a walking stereotype.
Devil
Wears Prada is a great way to put it.
But
she's that character.
But I saw that movie and I thought it was actually pretty good. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Prada wasn't bad.
It's a constant opening scene from Devil
Wears Prada. Yeah, and it's just everything says is exactly what you would expect her to say. It's exactly what you would expect. I don't know. I don't want to insult anybody by saying anything more about it, but that part of the show,
yeah,
I can't stand it. But what my wife and I both really like about the show is the woman playing Supergirl, we think, does a fantastic job. We think. Maybe other people disagree, but we like her. We like that it's a show that features a really good relationship between two sisters.
I'll trust you on that one, because the relationship as it was built in the pilot was ridiculous.
Well, maybe, but...
And mostly just because it's... And I don't know how much I can fault the TV show and how much I can just fault comics for this. It's a really hacky premise on a lot of levels.
Well, yeah, I mean that...
Right out of the gate.
Most of that comes from the comic book. I mean, I'm not sure what they could have done about that. I mean...
And the weird time tracks-esque plot where, we have to recover escaped convicts.
Well, again, that...
Is that from the comics?
Well,
because that totally sounds like a TV thing, so you can have episodic
villains. It is a TV thing,
okay,
but it's a TV thing that you see a lot in comic book TV things. They did a similar thing in Smallville a couple times, I think. So, and they're doing a similar thing in Flash right now. I mean, it's pretty standard for them to do in TV comic book things. But most of her backstory and everything, and if it's not identical to the comic book, it's very similar to the comic book.
Some of it was different than what I remember from the comic book, but I also remember I know three or four different origins for her, depending on which iteration of the comics.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, so this might not...
The pilot was very awkward in terms of trying to shoehorn certain comic book lore into a TV show that fit a format that the people who make Warner Brothers TV shows is kind of, you know, they've got a thing now, right? It's like, well, we did Arrow and it was successful, and we did Flash and it was successful, and so we're going to kind of do this. And you can see that they're approaching it the exact same way, and so they're
except for weird twists because it's a girl.
Well,
and they're really annoying.
That's right, and all of that did make the pilot pretty awkward, but
including a final fight scene that is the most. I'm going to say, aside from the offensive lines in it, the fact that that fight scene appears to exist purely for those lines, because the logistics of the fight scene also make no sense. I won't go into details,
but there
were a couple things that I was like, okay, what just happened to end the fight would not end the fight. And none of it, but it's the usual deal where like the hero and the villain's power levels seem woefully mismatched, and then they change for no reason.
Right.
That usual shit.
Yeah, the pilot does have those problems. But, I mean, again, we like the actor playing Supergirl. We like that, you know, that it's a big deal that she has a relationship with her sister, and that's featured in the show. Yeah. You don't get to see that very often. And in subsequent shows, there's always some problematic thing, as there probably is always going to be, unfortunately. But
I mean, if it's good enough to be entertaining beyond that, because I mean, there's never a show that doesn't have that problematic thing somewhere. You know?
Well, I'm not sure it's going to keep your attention, because it is a super. I mean, you don't really get into superhero
and
stories.
That's the thing, is I want to be on this bandwagon because I've jumped off so many of the other ones.
Well, I know. I mean, but you can't.
I hate to
you
be
can't.
Behind,
you can't be faulted for.
We'll see. We'll see.
It's just not your thing. I get that.
Well, but I watch a lot of superhero movies. But that may be the thing, is I can last about 2 hours.
Yeah, it's a movie.
Well, and I keep getting fucked over though. Because, like, Arrow, I left it. I never liked it, but apparently it got good. Flash, because of Arrow, I didn't do, and apparently it's awesome. As near as I can tell, I literally stopped watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. the episode before it got really different and really good.
Well, I don't know if I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ever got, but we keep watching it, so I don't know. But we watch Flash, and, you know, we do like Supergirl, and we look forward to watching it, but, like, my wife really looks forward to Tuesdays when she can watch Flash and iZombie right in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
She likes them both a lot. I think she likes Supergirl every bit as much.
And I'm getting picky about... I'm trying to get more picky about my shows because there's just too many and I want to do other things.
Really, we only watch Arrow because sometimes they have crossovers with Flash.
I mean, sometimes they have crossovers with Constantine, which doesn't exist anymore.
Arrow is okay. It's just, we probably wouldn't watch it if it didn't have crossovers with Flash. Oh, except now they have a character on Arrow that I'm really excited about. And the actor who's playing the guy who will become this hero is really good. I wish I could remember his name because I'll bet you'd recognize his name. But he's going to be, I can't remember. What happened there?
Long shot.
No.
Four.
Mr. Terrific?
Terrific?
Yeah. Is that right? Am I getting it mixed up with something else? Someone out there knows who I'm talking about. I cannot believe I'm having a blank right now about this character, because I like this character in the comics.
If you'd like to correct William, go to the blog, TheMagicalTalkingHead.com.
He's the DC character that sometimes, there's been two of them. One was a white guy, and he wears a belt that's like a boxing prize fighter belt.
Okay.
That says Fair Play on it.
Okay.
And then the second incarnation is an African American guy, and he wears a leather jacket with Fair Play down the arm.
Yeah, never heard any
of
this.
The thing that's the same.
These sound like pro wrestlers.
The thing that's the same about both of them is that
Fair Play.
Their superpower, quote unquote, is just that they're really super smart and they're like Olympic level athletes.
Ah, Ozymandias stuff going on.
And they're really cool characters. And so this, I like how they've introduced him. He's got good rapport and chemistry with the existing characters. And I'm kind of excited to see how he sort of manifests his abilities and becomes part of the team on the show.
Sure.
But a lot of the people, some of the people they've introduced in Arrow are moving on to yet another show, Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, geez.
So it's gonna feature Ray Palmer, the Ray Palmer version of the Atom, Hawk Girl, the White Canary, which is a relatively new character in the comic books and not that similar to the White Canary that's going to be in the show. And
I was kind of shocked.
Captain Cold.
Wikipedia stuff. Ra's al Ghul is on Arrow, and I'm like...
Was, yeah, he was.
That's weird for a show that's basically ghetto Batman to bring in an actual Batman villain.
Well, it's not weird because that's what they've been doing the whole time is borrowing stuff from Batman.
But Arrow has its own stuff. I mean, Arrow was a comic.
Yes, yes, but they've been borrowing Batman stuff since the very beginning.
You mean that old Chinese dude on that island was from Batman?
Well, I'm saying...
I stopped really early.
I'm saying... Roz's daughter Nyssa's been in it since the very beginning.
Oliver's alcoholic sister is from Batman?
I'm just saying.
That would be awesome.
From the very beginning, it's pretty clear they're thinking, all right, well, what people want is Batman, not Green Arrow. So let's just put a lot of Gotham City stuff. Well, the Huntress, I think, was
in one of the early... Yes, she was, yeah.
And she was terrible, by the way.
Absolutely.
Terrible portrayal of Huntress.
In her defense... At that point, at least, every single thing about the show was terrible. So,
But I mean, you know, she's borrowed from Gotham City and stuff. So it's like, I really liked what I liked about the first season of Arrow was, and what distinguished, I thought, it from Batman, and that's true in the comics
Spider-Man.
Too. Was his kind of, I don't know, in the comic books, one of the best things they did for Green Arrow, I think, was this was sometime after he was first created, because he was originally some kind of copy of Batman. But what they made him sort of a liberal, you know, like a social activist, liberal kind of guy. And they kind of had that a little bit in the first season of Arrow, which I thought was really cool and kind of brave, really, I thought.
There were aspects of it. It had so much navel-gazing intermixed that it was hard to...
And they kind of dropped it after a while.
It was probably as close as the CW gets, so...
I wish they'd bring it back and bring it back more unapologetically, like, okay, he's just going to be this guy who's in favor of liberal causes and, you know, who might not get along with some of the other rich people he knows because they're not that way. I mean, that to me, that's interesting.
Well, and it is because the original, like, one of the great arguments against Batman as a whole, that I found one of the most sound arguments against everything he's doing is the argument that, you know, barring coming up with random murderous psychos, like, really, Bruce Wayne could be doing a lot more good if he was taking the route his father did, which is essentially billionaire philanthropist. And while there are mentions to the Wayne Foundation and stuff like that, it's not really his bag. And at least the way first season Green Arrow worked, there was a lot of that. Like, a lot of him trying to essentially, like, in addition to avenging whatever and finding out the mystery, there was him trying to do social programs.
Yeah. Like, well, that. I mean, I wonder if they're worried that they're going to alienate someone by making him too political, but to me, that's just, you're just being a chicken. I mean, I don't consider myself a liberal or a conservative, and I'm sure there are things that they could have him do or stand for that I would not agree with politically, but I'd still think it's a cool story.
Yeah.
I don't have to agree with everything he believes and thinks and does to like the character.
More you, there are a lot of people who would.
I suppose that's true. Think
I'm not saying it would happen, but I'm saying it's a theoretically understandable fear, because people do that. I mean, people boycott Target because Target stopped gendering their toys.
That's weird.
Yes, it is. People boycott stores because they stopped selling Confederate flags.
Right, but how many people?
Well,
enough people, really?
No, I think a vocal enough minority to make the CW scared.
Well, that's
like
too bad.
I said, I'm not sure it's true, but I think most other TV channels would also react.
Well, I would love it if Green Arrow was, like, you know, total, as they say, bleeding heart liberal. Even if he believed in things and did things that I didn't agree with, I think that would be an interesting character and a cool story.
We try not to politicize too much in our TV shows, unless it's about politics. Then you can get away with it.
See,
and
like,
even then, you have to whitewash a lot of
shit. Right now, he's running for mayor. So, how... But he's not standing for anything.
Yeah.
Really. You know what I'm saying? I think he's even running unopposed. So it's like, okay, so here we have an opportunity, even in the context of the story, to make him a cool sort of political and have him take a stand on things.
What's Aaron Sorkin doing? Let's bring him in to write a couple episodes.
I don't know. I just think it would be, I guess I like stories even to be challenging to me personally.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, well, that's an interesting stand that person's taking. I don't agree with it, but maybe I should reconsider that. Maybe that is a better idea than what I think. And I might conclude that I still don't like it, but at least it's fun to have that experience.
I'm fine with that with characters. Generally speaking, when filmmakers are taking stands, I don't agree with
But
characters, I'm totally fine with.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm talking
about. At
least
as an initial concept.
Sure.
But yeah, we'll see. We'll see on Supergirl. Gonna keep up with it for now, but Elementary came back. I haven't seen that yet. I'm very excited. We're behind on Fargo. We've only watched like two episodes of Fargo. I don't know what it is. This season is not grabbing me in the same way, and everybody else I talk to says they're liking it more than the first season. So I'm not sure what that's about.
Excuse me.
I think that's it. Should we pull some hat things out
think
of hats?
We should, yes.
You bleeding heart moderate, you.
Jazz wants to know.
What does Jazz want to know?
What kind of stories around today do you think are culturally beneficial or culturally harmful?
Oh. This is a very complicated question.
It is. I mean, immediately you have to decide what criteria you're using. I mean, of course, some people think that.
Well, but the assumption is that it's your criteria. What William thinks is culturally beneficial or harmful.
But I.
Do you not know what William thinks? Who am I speaking to now, Sylvia?
Well, if you have some answers to this, go ahead.
I don't know that I do. I mean, I guess I can go with cultural harmful. I feel like a lot of stories in media, and in the most widely consumed media at this point, which I'm going to say is TV, movies, and video games, I'll even throw in there. I suppose music too. There's this opiate factor in that when you look at them, they're all telling the same stories over and over again. And I feel like it's just sort of lulling us. Well, and I'm a prime example how little I'm willing to suffer for art anymore. Like, I won't watch a TV show because it makes me sad. Or I won't watch one because it's too heavy, you know, things like that. And I like to think I'm more self-aware than most on that. So people are just, I mean, holy shit, give me a murder mystery. Okay, How to Get Away with Murder might work. But in general, how many murder mystery shows are there out there that are the exact same as they've been since the 80s? It's the same damn show.
Well, I guess, and I think this kind of is similar to what you're saying. For me, it's often not so much the stories we do have that are beneficial or harmful, but the stories we don't have.
Yeah.
Because
really, I would just love more original stories.
Right. I mean, I do think,
which is the reason why I can't stop reading books, because books have a little more freedom in that.
There are stories that I think send terrible messages, especially to women and especially to girls.
Yeah.
And I guess I should say, especially to boys, for that matter, both about girls and about boys. I guess I tend to be really sensitive to stories that I think send specific messages that I find to be, you know, damaging in the sense that they're lies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that say, this is what a girl is like, or this is what a boy is like.
They're hegemonic.
Right.
In a huge way.
But also, there are also some stories around race that do the same thing.
Quite so.
And so, yeah, there are those stories that I think they're spreading lies about, stereotypes about men, women, boys, girls, people of color, and also ageist stories out there, spreading lies. But even in those cases, it seems to me that if there were more stories telling more accurate pictures or more diverse pictures, then the lies that those stories are telling would sort of lose their potency.
Well, and as we've said in general, then people can pick and choose.
Exactly.
You know? And people can determine. It's the same way that, you know, women in TV is not being fixed by Joss Whedon. His strong female characters are problematic in different ways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what we really need is a diversity of characters.
Right, right. So
The interstitial video I'm going to make you watch addresses some of this.
So, I mean, if I'm given a particular thing, right, and you ask me, do you think this is sending something positive out to our culture or something negative out to our culture, I could probably tell you on balance what I think it is. But most of the time, I'm thinking about stories in our culture, which, as I think you and everybody else knows, I'm thinking about all of the time, constantly.
Yes, you are.
I'm mostly thinking about what new stories we can put out there.
Absolutely.
Rather than, I do critique given specific stories. Like, for example, for the last 2 days, actually, I've been sort of making a study of Peter Pan.
Ooh.
I read the novel. I read the script. I mostly skimmed the script just to see what was different about it from the novel, which wasn't very much.
Yeah.
I watched the Mary Martin musical.
Okay.
I watched a stage production of the original play, which turned out not to be entirely the original play, but mostly it was. And I watched the Disney version all again. I've done all of this looking at Peter Pan.
Yeah.
And
do you find it culturally beneficial or culturally harmful?
Well, the thing is, there are so many versions of Peter Pan. For example, the Disney version of Peter Pan bears almost no resemblance to the source material at all.
Oh.
They seem to have added bits, and I'm baffled as to why they added...
Well, which Disney tends to
specific
do,
extended scenes. Well, it served to make it more racist than the original source material was. And I was like, is that the only reason you did this? Is that the only reason you... I mean, it's only like an hour and 40 minutes long, and a good maybe 10, maybe 15 minutes of material that was not in the original source material, where they, you know, in the original source material, there are native, Native Americans, it makes it seem like, living on the island.
Indians.
And, but you don't really experience them directly so much.
Oh, okay.
In the novel or in the play. And I thought, well, maybe there are stage directions that maybe put it in the play more, but I don't think so. Right. I think you can, there's just a couple exceptions, but for the most part, you don't really get a lot of information about the tribe. But in the Disney
thing,
you go to where the tribe is.
Smoke 'em, peace,
yeah, pie, all that, that all of that stuff. It is terrible.
Pretty sure he trades them Neverland for 2 cents worth of glass beads.
And Disney made it more sexist. Mm-hmm. Hook makes the comment, you can make a jealous woman do anything. And so they're going to do something.
You know, you can make a jealous
woman
do anything. Well,
this is not in the original source material,
you know,
Hook saying this.
Gun to her head. You can also make a not jealous woman or a jealous man or a not jealous man do anything.
So the Disney version of Peter Pan is terrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've always hated it.
Now, the original source material is interesting in that it's got its sexist and racist aspects too, but it's to ask whether or not it has what its cultural impact is difficult, because I think the cultural impact of Peter Pan even before the Disney version was a lot different than the author, what's his name, Barry, very different than I think he anticipated. I think he welcomed it. I think he capitalized on it and everything else. I don't think he had any complaints about it, but I don't think when he wrote it, he thought that it would, what happened to it would happen. You know, in fact, his original title for the play, because that came before the novel, was
Orin Starkiller. No, he doesn't.
No, Peter and Wendy. I mean, they were both stars of the thing. It wasn't just Peter Pan, you know. And when you read the play and the novel both, you don't really get the impression that Peter is the focus of this exclusively. He's just a character in it.
Yeah.
And he's very critical of Peter, because Peter's, you know, a short-sighted, narcissistic, not really connected
Peter's
to reality.
An asshole. That's always been my problem.
But and the story doesn't shy from calling him that and saying, "Hey, this is the way he is." And Wendy is kind of there playing mother to sort of offset that. And so the story is really about both of them and that kind of dynamic between them in a way. But I think what Barry intended when he wrote it was all he wanted to do was reproduce, you know, make the audience watching kind of remember what it was like when they were kids and they would meet a bunch of other kids in the park and they'd spontaneously make up some adventure collectively.
Yeah.
And they'd make this stuff up and they'd go through this thing and it would be this fun. And when I read the novel, that's exactly the effect it had. It wasn't, I don't think Barry intended for it to be all that clever or any kind of biting satire or any kind of commentary on anything. I don't think it was supposed to be like Alice in Wonderland or Wizard of Oz or anything like that. It was just very simple, These are kids, and they're pretending all of this stuff's happening, and you're seeing the world through their eyes, and it's entertaining for you as adults. And maybe it's also even a little bit of a, you know, like usual, when you watch kids pretend to be adults, it kind of opens your eyes to how absurd things can be in the adult world. But that's all. It wasn't supposed
to be.
Means
the greatest Peter Pan remakes of all time were Muppet Babies and Bobby's World.
Well, it wasn't supposed to be deep. It wasn't supposed to be. And I didn't get the impression.
Both awesome shows.
I didn't get the impression he envisioned Peter Pan as some kind of icon of youth or whatever. But it sort of became that. And he rolled with it. He rewrote some of the play a couple times actually, and but I don't think the later incarnations of Peter Pan have been beneficial for culture.
Yeah,
I don't think.
I have one that I hadn't thought about in a while. One version of Peter Pan that I actually liked, and it was maybe just called like The Adventures of Peter Pan or something. It was a kid's cartoon show. I think Deke made it. And it was just, it was essentially a series. Like Wendy was still there. Everybody was still on Neverland and just hijinks ensued, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it had a tremendous emphasis on the strange and complex relationship of Captain Hook and Peter.
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely enemies, but like they both had such sort of obsessions with each other and what that meant. And like I remember a particularly fascinating episode in which, as Hook was being defeated again and something by Peter, he basically taunted Peter that Peter would never grow up and therefore didn't know what it was like to be a man, that he, like, Captain Hook had been a child and a youth and everything, and then he was an adult, so he knew all of those.
Mm-hmm.
And so Peter goes on a quest, essentially, to grow up in that episode, and then finds out, you know, learns a valuable lesson, or I don't even remember. But
that's kind of interesting.
And so, which is, again, very much not the point you're saying.
No,
and,
no.
But I love when that can happen, and it happens so rarely. Shit gets remade 1,000 times, and then every once in a while, somebody takes a new edge to it. Another great example, Wicked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick to death of The Wizard of Oz, and there's some issues with Wicked and that whole series, which I didn't. I only read like the first two or whatever, and the musical is a whole other kettle of fish. But it was original, and it made it thought-provoking, and it gave a very different perspective, and I found that very interesting. And it comes back to the same thing: originality and diversity.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, just for funsies, because it was in my head recently, you know what stories are harmful that I want to stop? All the stories about, they're usually based on true stories, sometimes they're not, about black people succeeding due to the notice/charity of sweet white people who help them go to great heights. The Help. The Blind Side. Driving goddamn Miss Daisy. Stop it. Stop giving not horrifically racist white people something so they can pat themselves on the back. All right? Come on.
Well, I mean, that's... Yeah.
I'm tired of that story.
Yeah, I mean.
Also, all romantic comedies in the world.
Well, see, that's another thing. We watched a couple movies recently. Like, we watched them because they were of a particular genre. Like, we watched San Andreas because it's a disaster movie, and my wife tends to like those. It was so. I mean, the effects were pretty neat, but
narrative beats.
Unbelievable! I thought, is this
right down to like the family phone call just before tragedy strikes?
Are people really still making movies like this that are so? I mean, I just can't believe that this is what people are trying to sell in blockbusters. What was the other one? Similar kind of thing. It was. I don't remember now, but it was. I can't remember, but it was the same thing. The you know, like San Andreas, it's really a disaster movie, and all of the other stuff is kind of set dressing.
At least that's supposed to be the case.
This was another kind of thing where there was, the main thing was something, it wasn't a disaster, it was something else. But then there was some human interest stuff going on that was supposed to be compelling, and it was just so derivative. I just couldn't believe that people watch this stuff.
Get that right, because then you have things like the remake of Footloose or Pitch Perfect 2. Both of those movies we went and saw in the theaters. In both cases, we went for one specific reason. Different for each, but one specific reason. For Footloose, we went to see dancing, because it's Footloose. For Pitch Perfect 2, we went to see a cappella singing, because again, it's Pitch Perfect 2. Both of them had those elements, and I enjoyed those elements while they were there, but spent so much time trying to justify itself as a plot. And it was a shitty plot, and it was a plot I didn't care about, and it was a plot I'd seen a thousand times before, could have written before I walked in on the back of a napkin. And so it's like, for once, I'm not even asking you to have an original plot, just don't let it get in the way, and yet they still have to hit all the beats. Same thing with a disaster movie. You could have just left out most of the little human interest shit and just have a disaster movie.
Well, maybe another type of storytelling that's not really good for people in the culture is, stories that promote a lot of violence that promote
anything Zack Snyder has ever touched.
Promote violence as a solution to problems.
Yes.
Or present a version of the world that's totally divisive and black and white, and this person's right and this person's wrong, and the people who are right win in the end by blowing the other people up.
Yep.
I mean, these probably don't send very good messages, but again, if we had other types of stories, it seems like the popularity of those stories would kind of take care of themselves.
And it's because all of this stuff becomes propaganda.
That's right.
The media reinforcing the existing culture, and then the culture stagnates.
Well, and see, this is why I was thinking about this very thing in relation to Peter Pan, because what a lot of people think Peter Pan stands for and what the culture sort of celebrates him for, and this is stated at the end of the musical, and I think a lot of the plays do it now too, is
flat tax.
No, Hook asks Peter, what are you, you know? Because there comes a point where Hook starts to wonder what he's really up against, because it doesn't seem like just some normal boy with, you know, whatever. And Peter says, I'm youth, I'm joy, I'm freedom. Well, in the novel, he doesn't say he's freedom. He says he's the bird who makes its way out of the shell or whatever.
Mm.
And the narrator in the novel says, well, of course, this was all just nonsense, but it's what Peter said. He didn't even know what it meant. Because
Peter Pan's one of the least joyous people I know. He's constantly throwing tantrums.
Well, you know, Barry, in the novel, and I presume also in the play, he wasn't intending for that statement on Peter's part to be, I am this thing, I am the eye, but that's how people took it.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is, and when you read the novel, you get this even more, because Barry talks about what Neverland is. Neverland, like, everyone has their own Neverland. It's built from their own dreams and wishes.
Okay.
And but also, your Neverland has pieces that are contributed from people you know.
Okay.
So it's subjective, but you're not building it entirely yourself.
Yeah.
And he talks about how family members will have similar Neverlands or whatever. But in the course of telling the story, what Peter Pan really is, he's not youth. He's specifically boyhood, specifically kind of first world boyhood, white boyhood. And he's trapped. He's not free. He has to live on this cramped island.
Yeah.
And the fact is, what Barry creates is, I don't think he's doing this on purpose or thoughtfully, but what he ends up doing without realizing, I think, is he presents I think to a sensitive reader, this notion that everyone's Neverland is starting to become the same. And they all have pirates, because pirates are running everything in the corporations and in government and everything else. They all have natives, because there's got to be someone you're blaming everything on. Yeah. And they've all got scary monsters, because you're being told to be afraid of your mouthwash and your car and everything else. And what's left of childhood is this kid who is not coincidentally white and male. And that this is what Peter is not. The picture of youth. He's a shadow of it, a degraded form of it that you're left with when all of this is done. And so then when Disney comes along, and Disney is the very icon of co-opting stories and taking the soul out of them and turning them into propaganda for some other purpose, it's basically taking what Barry envisioned and turning it into the very thing that his original story sort of critiqued in a way.
Yeah.
Unintentionally critiqued.
I don't think that's unique to Peter Pan. I think you can find a lot of Disney things based on older stories that you're like, huh, the point of that story was X, and Disney made it the exact opposite. Which is pretty much the fact that every Disney thing ends on a happy ending, and a lot of those stories decidedly did not.
More than made it the exact opposite, it became the embodiment of what the story was sort of pointing to. Yeah. If
Barry was fighting against the Disneyfication of society.
Well, but he wasn't. I mean, I think he would have, I don't remember if he was alive when the movie was made, but he would have thought that was great, because he just, you know, he was an opportunist. He wanted to make money. But I think his original story sort of, in the way it painted how Neverland works, and then talked about how, I mean, because that version of Neverland was supposed to be the composite of all of the darling children's vision of Neverland.
Yeah.
And I think Peter, the element of Peter specifically came from Wendy. Other elements came from the boys. But there were boys, the Lost Boys were literally lost boys. Boys.
I remember that, yeah, the Lost Boys were freakier in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And weird shit, some of them died and like Peter let them and stuff.
Well, okay, but exactly. But I mean, think of it for a second. If Neverland is a reflection of people's dreams, what they dream about, and maybe a little bit of their hang-ups and stuff too, because Barry kind of insinuates that that's, you know, on Neverland too, your nightmares.
Yeah.
Then why would there be homeless boys on there? What is that saying? I mean, I think Barry's sort of maybe unintentionally making Neverland a reflection of our cultural nightmares, our cultural realities, and what's happening is in we live in a world where there are people who are going to benefit from everyone's Neverland being exactly the same.
Yeah.
And again, what does that make it? The idea of a person that is the embodiment of youth, that can only exist in recent history, right? I mean, the idea of
I think so, yeah.
You know, the idea of childhood is a very special time where you only experience certain things, and then when you become an adult, you can't experience those things anymore.
Yeah, the idea of aging as a tragedy of something.
Yeah. All of that's a very recent thing. And so, by his very nature, Peter cannot really represent anything good. He can only represent this prisoner on this island that we, as human beings, can only appreciate for a brief time in our life. And so the whole thing symbolizes how our culture is moving toward this commodification of stories and of cultural realities, and gender and youth and age and certain experiences, and turning it, like you said, turning it into propaganda. Everything becomes propaganda. And so on one hand, the original Peter Pan to me is kind of speaking to that, and then Disney actually turns it into
that.
Yeah, to me that's fascinating, but also horrifying. But I don't know. I think that the way popular culture perceives Peter Pan is is very different from what I think how Barry started out. One thing that makes it different is people added a lot of coming of age stuff to it.
Yeah. Which is weird with the Eternal Youth.
Oh no, it's very weird because Peter can't be more than like 6, which means Wendy can't be more than 6,
yeah.
Which means if you were making a film and you wanted everyone to be accurate ages, you'd have Wendy playing, pretending she's mom or whatever, but coming from a 6-year-old, it would look just like playing house.
Yeah.
It wouldn't look like, oh, she's becoming a woman, so she's actually falling in love with Peter.
Yeah.
And that's how I read it in the original. But whenever you see it portrayed, like that film they had not so long ago, remember?
Man, I think it's still in the theater.
Yeah. Well, no. Not that one. The one before that, it was like, I think it was called, I don't remember what it was called, but don't you remember they had a, it was live action, and it was after Hook. It was, well, anyway, in that one, it was all about, you know, sort of.
Oh,
this,
they had, sci-fi had a miniseries for it.
Well, but they always seem to focus on this coming of age thing with Wendy. And so she's always cast as like 12 or 13.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so then Peter is 2. And that completely overtakes the entire narrative.
Yeah.
And anything else that might've been the original story is lost. Which is too bad, because there's actually a lot of cool stuff in the original story. They should keep them really young, and it should, you know, yes, Wendy plays house, and, you know, she wants Peter to be the dad and all this stuff, but it's not really about a girl discovering boys or something.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's something completely different. But that has overshadowed everything, and so then Peter Pan becomes sort of a, I don't know what he becomes then. This clueless bad boy who this girl is in. I don't know. In the film they made, that I think it was just called Peter Pan. I think it was about 10 or 12 years ago. You don't remember?
No.
It was terrible, and it was all about.
I purposely don't watch.
It was all about Wendy being doe eyed about Peter, and Peter was creepy.
Peter's always creepy.
Well, I mean, he was. I think the boy they cast was like 10 or 12, but I mean, he was just a creepy kid.
I gotta rein you in. Have you got a closing thing? Because we are way over time.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
You've gone for like
25
minutes.
I didn't really mean to talk about it, but I just been.
If you would like to learn more about Peter Pan, visit your local library. Also, tell William everything he said wrong on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Also, stop making movies about white people helping black people to success.
Well, and what movies do you think are culturally beneficial or harmful?
We're out of time, so it don't matter.
Well, I'm sure they can tell us on the blog.
Oh, you meant them. I thought you were asking me.
No.
Yeah, no, if you guys
I know us, I took up all your time. I apologize.
Well, I didn't have any answers, so,
okay.
Except for don't make the movies about the white people.
Well, our mostly our answer was, it's doesn't,
diversity.
Yeah,
we need originality.
Yeah, more stories that
yes.
that are good. Regardless of how many stories are bad.
It's NaNoWriMo, so you guys make some original stories. Go! We'll see you in a week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat @gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.